Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Hey, welcome everyone to a Baseball America College Podcast, promising to make it all the way through. I'm John Manuel, along with Michael Anna, and remotely from Atlanta, our Ted Cahill. This podcast is brought to you by Louisville Slugger. There's power in numbers. Slugger sponsors our Baseball America Top 25. Coincidentally, Louisville is number one in that top 25, and that has nothing to do with Slugger. It has to do with the fact that Louisville has the best player in the country, and they're undefeated, and they're really good, Teddy. But you saw one of our preseason top five teams, University of Florida, with preseason unranked Auburn. And those teams went in opposite directions this weekend, Teddy. And a lot of teams from the state of Florida went in the wrong direction. I mean, right now, our highest-ranked team from the state of Florida is Florida Gulf Coast. It's like Dunk City all of a sudden is our highest-ranked team. And meanwhile, Miami's not in the rankings, and Florida and Florida State took big tumbles. What's the problem with those three power schools, those power five schools that have been national powers historically in college baseball, the Gators, the Hurricanes, and the Seminoles?
Yeah, I mean, right now, there's a common theme there, and it's that they aren't hitting. Florida has struggled offensively all season. I mean, I guess all three of them really have. Florida State struggles really came to a head this weekend in Blacksburg, where they lost on Sunday 17-0 to take a series loss. Florida was swept at Auburn on the opening weekend of SEC play, and Miami went up to North Carolina State and lost a series after, you know, kind of upsetting Georgia Tech in Miami last season. It looked like their bats maybe had gone back on track, but then this weekend in Raleigh, I guess they kind of reverted back to what they had been earlier in the season. And you know, none of them are hitting particularly well. They all have their individual reasons for why they're not hitting particularly well. But especially in Florida and Florida State's case, you would figure at some point they'll get it together offensively. Both those teams have really talented players that just aren't going right now. Taylor Wall, last year's first team All-American at shortstop, he's really struggling. Dylan Busby is struggling for the Seminoles. They're missing Drew Mendoza, who's still hurt. They're struggling, but you know, those are pretty talented players that you figure would eventually get it going with the bat. I mean, it can't just be Quinty Neoporte hitting grand slams all season long. That's not going to work. And
right,
they found that out after Friday in Blacksburg. And for Florida, pretty much no one is hitting. They're all scuffling. They're probably pressing for the most part. But Kevin O'Sullivan says he's kind of settled on a lineup at this point. So if they can just get settled into their roles, stop trying to do so much, just realize that that's a team that really only needs to score 4 or 5 runs a game for the most part. They play defense and pitch to the level that they're capable. You know, they don't need to mash. They just need to, find a way to score a few runs a game and give their pitchers a chance to win a game 4-3 or 5-1 or something.
I'll tell you what's surprising to me about Florida State. It's just stunning to see them get shut out. I feel like, I guess they missed Jackson Luke. I guess he's got shin splints and has been out for...
Yeah, he's banged up.
Yeah, been out for a week plus. And yeah, they seem like they miss him in the lineup somewhat, but it's still a deep lineup. But, Cal Raleigh really hasn't gotten going. But I guess that... like you said, I assume they're going to hit at some point, but 17-0 on that Sunday game really feels like...
I believe that was the worst shutout loss in Mike Martin's career.
I have to imagine.
That's a loud weekend for Virginia Tech. They scored 30 runs in the last 2 days of that series to win. And, Blacksburg can be a tough place to pitch sometimes, but... You gotta do a bit better than that if you're gonna win some baseball games. You can't be giving up 30 runs in 2 games.
Yeah, that's just unexpected. And I guess the real issue is the bullpen. Florida State was winning Saturday 10-2 in that game, and could not hold that lead. Wound up losing 13-12. You're Florida State, and you've got that's where we were talking in the meeting the other day. Tyler Holton is kind of their best guy. We kind of think Tyler Holton and Carson Sands are two best guys. They moved Drew Carlton to the bullpen, but they didn't exactly bring him in when that lead was there. It was like Will Zierzow and Jim Voiles. These are veteran guys. This guy's got hammered all weekend, basically, Mike. How enthusiastic are you about Florida State's pitching long term? Do we just, you know, do they have the arms to be an Omaha team like we thought they were preseason?
Right. Well, you know, the one thing I'll say is Cole Sands did pitch well this weekend. He was like the one guy who pitched well for this weekend, which is an encouraging sign for that for him and for them, just because he's had his ups and downs so far this year and, you know, throughout his young career to this point. But yeah, I mean, looking at their pitching staff coming into this year, obviously it was an experienced group given that they returned their entire rotation. But yeah, if you look at them in terms of pure stuff and, you know, the raw tools that they have, they don't necessarily have the, you know, electricity of, you know, Florida's staff, for instance, or some of these other pitching staffs in the country. But bank on, you know, their experience, their pitchability, their pitching feel, and then you combine that with, you know, their offense, which we expected them to hit more than they have.
Right.
So, you know, to me, I don't look at it as a dominant pitching staff per se, but I certainly didn't think their pitching would be a liability. I thought the returning experience would be a strength for them. So it is concerning that they're struggling to this point. You know, I do think, you know, like I mentioned, I mean, Sands pitching well, and if, you know, Holden had a little bit of a hiccup this weekend, but if he bounces back from that, you know, that'll be important for them. But, you know, they're going to Notre Dame next weekend. And then, you know, after that, they're hosting UNC, and that's going to be a tough matchup for them. And yeah, I mean, the schedule's not going to get any easier from there. So
if you're going to get your pitching right, maybe playing Notre Dame, which is hitting .233, is the team to do that against. But, you know, they have nine home runs. I mean, but it is. I know that there's disparities early in the year, but just look at the ACC team stats, where Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech have 37 home runs apiece. Oh no, I'm sorry, it's Wake Forest at Virginia Tech have 37 home runs apiece, and Boston College has one as a team. I know the weather's been challenging, but that is just stunning. The other thing that's startling about this is looking, and I saw Miami Friday. We'll wrap up the ACC portion of the Sunshine State here. But Miami's hitting .206 as a team. There are three ACC teams that have scored fewer runs, but the Canes hitting .206, .334, .301, and seeing them on Friday when they actually hit two home runs, outside of Roman Gonzalez and Carl Chester and Johnny Ruiz, there's no one in that lineup who struck me as a particularly decent college hitter. And the stats are worse than that. Their bottom four spots in the lineup Friday, guys, were all seniors, all hitting under .150. So it was brutal on paper. The fact they got a win, I think, tells you a little bit about Miami, that they do have some pitching. I do like Jesse Lepore. I do like Michael Mediavilla. So they do have some arms, but they're going to have to. They're going to be scraptastic this whole year.
The scary thing about those offensive numbers is they're actually an improvement over what they were a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
They were hitting lower than that as a team a couple weeks ago. So.
But just watching this, just the eye test, Miami offensively, without the freshman catcher Michael Amditis, who really provided some power and thickened their lineup out a little bit, figuratively and literally, they just don't have anybody who scares you. Not for me, Teddy, but Florida, I mean, you just saw him up close and personal. Let's transition to the SEC, Teddy. I mean, we could talk ACC all we want, but I want to talk SEC. I want to talk a little Big West, because Cal State Fullerton is so hot right now, as the saying goes in the original Zoolander movie.
So hot right now.
Definitely want to talk about the Titans a bit. But Teddy, what did you see with Florida? What did you see in person that you can regale Gator fans with that will encourage them, that so you can make a PSA that says it gets better?
Well, I mean, it's just the guys that have done this in the past that just kind of need to get going a little bit. You know, Jonathan India, he shows it. You know, it's there. I mean, he hit a home run on I think it was on Friday night, and he really needs to get it going. He's hitting under .300, and I mean, he has a chance to be their best hitter. And he has been probably their best hitter to this point, but it just hasn't quite been good enough. If you're looking for signs of life on Florida, it's really just you kind of have to trust that what they've done in the past, they'll eventually do again, and that, you know, that they have the ability to work out of this. And I really believe that they do. I think a lot of it is just mental. They're pressing. No one's hitting. And that obviously makes things very tough for everyone. Some of these guys are in their draft year. And that can be tough. Florida handled that really well last year. But, you know, a lot of guys that, you know, that can get in your head if you're not careful. So I think they just really need to, you know, ease up a little bit, just let the game come to them. That's all very, very much easier said than done. But they also need to do it quickly because LSU comes into Gainesville next weekend. And, you know, Florida's already 0-3 in the SEC. You know, it, like some of these other teams, it's not going to get any easier. And, you know, LSU is one of the absolutely best teams in the league. So, you know, it could go pretty bad. They could wind up with a pretty bad record here if they aren't able to get some things going. But they've played a lot better at home. They still haven't won on the road yet this year. And, they just are playing a lot better in Gainesville. So I guess that's one thing you can, look forward to is them getting back to Gainesville and them being able to play, you know, at home against LSU.
Teddy, do we see, you talk about Kevin O'Sullivan settling kind of on a lineup. Who's in that lineup right now? Who are their guys going to be going forward? Is Ryan Larson and Nelson Maldonado, are those guys in that lineup? Who's going to try to bring them out of this
funk? That is what settling on a lineup has meant to this point, is that, you know, those two guys are going to, you know, stay in the outfield, especially with Austin Laneworthy hurt now. He broke his hamate, and he'll be out from hitting for about a month now. So with him out, I guess you're going to see those guys in the outfield more. And you're going to see, I guess, J.J. Schwartz more at DH and first base to get Kulisarvi in the lineup when they can. But Andrew Baker is healthy now. He started hitting this week for the first time. He's been pitching. He was dealing with the broken hamate himself. So getting Baker going at the top of that order would be really big for them because he has a chance to be a pretty electric leadoff hitter. And if he can get on, that can make things easier for everyone hitting behind him then.
I feel like if I were on the Gator Zone message boards or whatever they're called, I would be tweeting, we got to get a better strength and conditioning coach guy so we can get it to stop having these broken hammocks. It's like that's like message board guy loves to pick on the strength and conditioning coach, I feel like. You know who would be message board guy if he hadn't worked here for 20 years? This guy right here. I would totally be message board guy. I see message board guy, and I'm like, there, but for the grace of God, go on. I mean, like, really, I feel you, message board guy, because I'd be doing exactly the same thing. And when I'm watching games about teams that I care about at home, I'm saying the exact same thing. So,
well, that's what Twitter's for now, though, too.
Yes, I start and delete many of those things. Six SEC sweeps this weekend, guys. Seven series in the league, and only Vanderbilt and Ole Miss was not a sweep. I mean, Mike, what caught your eye from the SEC opening weekend? I mean, what was the most surprising one about the SEC? Or, well, like I said, just what caught your eye one way or the other?
Yeah, well, I mean, well, certainly, and I won't talk about it that much because Teddy just talked about it for a while, but certainly Auburn sweeping Florida was the one that...
I meant what else?
What else?
Sorry. Sorry.
Beyond that... Yes. Yeah, you know, it's, Ole Miss, what they've done so far this year, you know, continues to be impressive.
They have some good weeks.
Yeah, coming back against Vanderbilt was impressive. And, you know, and we've talked about them a lot, how they're a young team and how we weren't sure, you know, pitching-wise, how they're going to line up. And, you know, but they continue to find ways to win. And, you know, the guys that they have grown up quickly and have responded quickly. And it's not that they didn't have... you know, talent. They were the number one recruiting class coming into this year, but, you know, they've just done a good job. That coaching staff, you have to give credit to the coaching staff as well, yeah, for getting them ready to play and, you know, starting the season with a sweep of, you know, East Carolina, a team that we thought, you know, very highly of coming into the year. And
speaking of sweeps, ooh.
Yeah, that was surprising as well, but we can touch on that later. But yeah, you know, Ole Miss has certainly been impressive. You know, LSU continues to roll. They seem to be in a good rhythm right now, you know, sweeping Georgia. And, teams that we didn't rank, but Kentucky wasn't impressive to me as well. You know, they've really, you know, sweeping Texas A&M. Obviously, you know, they were in our rankings last week, number 22. That was impressive to me, you know, and they started the year at Carolina and got swept at Carolina, but they've since rebounded and are coming together. And, you know, head coach, you know, Nick Mangione is doing a nice job in his first year there, you know, getting them together. So they're an interesting team to watch and a team that I know we discussed a little bit for the top 25 in our meeting this week.
That's a tough place to go in, isn't it, Teddy? To go sweep A&M. I mean, that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, that was really impressive to me. And what was impressive to me was the way that they did it. You know, they scored like 24 runs in that series, and A&M pitches. Like, that is A&M's identity at this point. They're struggling a little bit offensively, which was to be expected after everything they lost from their lineup last year. But Kentucky beat Brigham Hill on Friday night, and he's one of the better starters in the league.
Took it to him.
Typically. Yeah, they really got to him. And then they continue to swing it all weekend against, A&M has arms. Steven
right.
Kolek and Mitchell Kilkenny, they're 2018 names to watch. And, you know, Kentucky was able to score on them and score on the bullpen, which has been a bit of an issue for the Aggies. But, yeah, to me, what was impressive about that was just the way that Kentucky's offense got it going. You know, like you mentioned, how Nick Mangione has it going in his first season, and what he really has going is Kentucky's offense. He's done a great job getting those hitters ready to go.
I tell you, the other one that gets me in the SEC was Arkansas, because Arkansas, it feels like, and you guys can correct me, feels like the last few years, Arkansas's pitching depth, even when they got to Omaha, pitching depth has been an issue for them. I know Mississippi State is beat up. Pretty telling, again, how injured they were. I mean, I know you guys wrote about Jake Mangum pitching in midweek, but then they start him on a Sunday when they've lost the first two games of a weekend series. They start him on Sunday in SEC play, and, you know, predictably, a guy who's pretty new to pitching at the college level does not make out of the second inning there. But first 2 days of that series were double-digit strikeouts, and then Taccolini goes 4 for the save on Sunday.
One of my favorite names in college baseball.
You know, the strong Italian community there in Arkansas. You know, Taccolini, Dominic Taccolini, future World Baseball Classic stud for Italy. I mean, if A.J. Morris can do it, of course, it all comes back to the WBC for me. But that was impressive. I thought that the teams that did the most for themselves this weekend, for me, in the SEC, were Kentucky, Arkansas, Auburn. Those are teams that didn't make regionals last year, correct?
Correct.
That's huge for all those to get off the good starts. And then we ranked Missouri, guys, and I feel like we were reluctant to rank Missouri. When you win 19 games in a row, you're going to get ranked, especially when you go on the road. I'm worried about Alabama. I know it's a new coaching staff there, Greg Goff, all that kind of stuff, but that's been a very poor start to the year for Alabama.
You want to know how poor the start has been for Alabama?
How poor is it?
They are 10-10, and they have not played in a road game. So they open the season with a 20-game homestand, and they go 10-10 in it.
That's not what you want, as Joe Girardi says. That is not what you want. Alabama,
yeah,
right
Greg
now.
Greg Goff is digging out there. I mean, I feel confident that he's going to be able to get something going there eventually, but that is going to be a rebuild job for the Crimson Tide for the next few years.
So this may have, and I may be overstating that, but Alabama's at 215 in the RPI on WarrenNolan.com. That is an anchor around the whole SEC's neck. Their conference RPI cannot be the best in the country if you have a team all the way down there. That's something.
Well, the SEC had that last year with, Arkansas's RPI was pretty terrible. And the ACC did happen to be the best RPI conference in the country, but didn't really hold back the top of the SEC. What that does is it holds back the middle tier.
That's what I mean. It holds back some of those borderline teams. If you're on the bubble, that's bad for your bubble to have. The SEC's got I would say in general doesn't have somebody in the 200s, does it? I can't remember an SEC team in the 200s, but I haven't looked at it, studied it. And you have two teams that could be down there pretty low this year because Georgia, look away. It's hideous. It is. I mean, no disrespect, even though I just quoted Kramer talking about Georgia, but they give up a lot of runs, and not just on Friday. To give up 22 runs on Friday night to LSU, that's...
Yeah, I mean, they got to Lane in the first inning.
Right.
Alex Lane again started poorly, but, so they put up 4 in the top of the first, but then they had to get 27 outs, and they really struggled to do it.
Alex Lane, Kyle Wright, Alex Fado, all three of those guys continue to just kind of meh their way through the year, and Alex Lang's a little bit less than that. From the draft standpoint, Teddy, what did you see out of Fado? I mean, it sounds like the velocity was not good, which is what we keep on hearing.
Well, I mean, the velo for him has kind of been consistent all year, is what it sounds like. He's not throwing 96 like he was last year, but the problem on Friday night was that he didn't have his command. Usually he pitches with average to above average command, and he just didn't have that at all. He can succeed where he's pitching now in the low 90s. That's not a problem for him. I mean, it makes him a little bit lesser of a prospect if he doesn't show 96 at all this year.
Yes.
But he can succeed like that. His slider is still really sharp. He's still a very good changeup, but he's going to have to locate. And that was the issue. Was he was walking guys. He wasn't throwing quality strikes consistently, and Auburn made him pay.
Just a small aside, when we were talking about Texas A&M, I forgot that I was looking this up, but they have a future Greek World Baseball Classic player in John Doxakis. Great name. Left-hander. Doxa is like a glory, so it's great. Doxakis, it's a pretty great name, and his dad's Dean, which is a great Greek name, and his mom is Deanna, which is, I don't know, that could be Greek too, but that just stuck out to me. Keegan Thompson also stuck out too, I guess, this weekend. Teddy, pretty good Keegan Thompson, just... He's more compete than he is like flashy stuff, right? Compete, good breaking ball, and but really has Friday night guy presence, does he not?
He is. I mean, and that's the guy he's been since he was 16 and pitching for Team USA, really. He's very experienced on the amateur circuit. He pitched in some big games. He pitched against Cuba in a gold medal game for Team USA when he was in high school, and he's pitched on Friday nights in the SEC for a few years now, and he's coming back from Tommy John, and he's rolling right along. Butch Thompson, who doubles as Auburn's head coach and their pitching guy, thinks that Keegan probably has even more in the tank. He's still working his way back a little bit, but for now he's really getting the job done for them. And him and Casey Mize at the front of that rotation make Auburn, give Auburn a chance in any series. And Davis Daniel is a pretty talented freshman who hasn't completely figured it out yet. He's still working through some control issues, and he didn't make it very far in the game yesterday, and that has happened. But if he ever figures it out, their top three stacks up very favorably with most of the league. I mean, Florida and South Carolina, we talk all the time about how good 1-3 they are. If Davis Daniel can get it going, Auburn's really not that far off those two teams.
That's very encouraging for Auburn, for sure. That was not what I was expecting out of Auburn. It was a sweep this weekend. I just didn't see that coming. I have another meeting I have to go to, so I'm going to fail making it all the way through this podcast. I'm 0-2, you guys. I'm the worst, Jerry. But I am curious, Teddy. We did move. I wanted to pivot you guys rankings wise to the pack to the West Coast, if I could, just because we do have a new number 2 in Oregon State, and it does sound like Oregon State is, they're still balling, in a manner of speaking. Mike, it feels like Oregon State, and we had Washington go and sweep Utah this weekend. Feels like, and then, Teddy, I definitely want you to weigh in on, as you want to do, on my Tracy Smith obsession, because he posted like his 8 or 9 theses on the wall at on his wall this weekend for for Arizona State on his Twitter, which I know it's a new, we're in a new era when people in leadership positions tweet a lot, but that was unexpected. So, there's some subjects I'll let you guys discuss as in Mike Meyer style, but Mike, you should start by talking about Oregon State. I mean, like, why are they number two?
That's a good question, John. enjoy your meeting.
I'll enjoy hearing the answer later.
Well, yeah, you can listen to this later, yeah. So Oregon State, looking at what they did this weekend, sweeping Arizona State, like John said, and, you know, the thing that stands out to me, Teddy, and obviously you can weigh in, but it's just the pitching, and especially the way Luke Heimlich has pitched for them at the front of the rotation. He's been pretty dominant this year. I mean, you look at the numbers, and I'm pulling them up right now. He had another dominant start this weekend. He's 4-0 with a 0.25 ERA so far this year. He's given up one earned run. He struck out 44 in 36 and two-thirds innings to five walks. And it sounds like from reports that we've heard that his stuff is maybe ticking up a little bit. He might be throwing just a little bit harder, you know, and working in the lower 90s a little bit more. So he's a very interesting guy for this year's draft, a left-hander. You know, Bryce Femmel this weekend pitched very well behind him. And, two of the three games, they threw shutouts, you know, and they outscored them by a total of, let's see here, 16-1. So, you know, Oregon State's rolling right now, but they do have, you know, really their toughest challenge of the year so far, probably with Arizona, you know, coming into Corvallis next weekend, which should be a really, really fun series.
Yeah, no doubt. And you mentioned how well they're pitching. I mean, they're hitting very well, too, right now. And they really have it going in all facets. I don't have his numbers in front of me because I'm in Grant Park right now in Atlanta. But
I can
Nick
pull
Madrigal,
them up for you.
Nick Madrigal is rolling. I mean, he's hitting over 400. We knew Nick Madrigal was really good, but you know, he was a freshman All-American last year. He was very highly touted out of high school. But like, what's Madrigal's numbers coming out of this weekend?
All right, here we go. He's batting 426, 506 on base, 632 slugging. That's all very good. Three home runs so far this year. 11 RBIs. I mean, he's doing quite well. He's leading the team in most categories. KJ Harrison is hitting well for them. Caden Grenier is hitting 293, 397, 500.
Which is a really nice improvement for him. You know, last year he kind of struggled as a freshman. He didn't have the greatest summer offensively on the tape, but you know, he's another guy very highly touted out of high school. Those two guys coming in together, two really, really solid infielders, both offensively and defensively, and they give Oregon State a lot of versatility. And I mean, you just go through Oregon State's lineup right now, and really outside of Adley Rushman, who's a freshman behind the plate and hasn't really hit yet, they really have a lot of guys going, and you know, that's why they are where they are. You know, we thought this team was good, but they were a little shaky last year, and you know, they struggled down the stretch and they missed the NCAA tournament as a result. But there's talent there. There's a lot of talent there, and they're showing it right now.
Yeah, I mean, to me, they were one of the teams last year going into the NCAA tournament that were right on the bubble, them in North Carolina. To me, I think what both of those teams have done this year in some ways has been kind of similar, just in that the teams are a little older now, a little bit more experienced. The talent hasn't been an issue for them over the years, especially, I mean, last year you look at Oregon State. I mean, they have all the same guys that they had a year ago. They're just a year older. They're playing to their capabilities a little bit more, and you see how talented they are.
They are a lot healthier this year too, which has been key for them. I mean, they're doing all of this, and they don't even have Drew Rasmussen yet. He's really their one big injury this year. He's still working back from Tommy John, but
right.
Their pitching depth really got hit last year, and now they're healthy and they're throwing and like you said, they're improved and they're really rolling right now. Arizona is really rolling right now. I mean, that's going to be a great series this weekend. Mm-hmm. Arizona State not rolling right now. They have been as Jekyll and Hyde as any team this year. They won a game at TCU. They've been swept by Oregon State. They swept Long Beach State. You know, you just look at their schedule, and it's very up and down, and it's a young team. This is what happens to young teams. And, you know, like John mentioned, Tracy Smith, their head coach, posted like nine reasons why I'm not going to give up on the season yet. And the last one is because there are like 36 games left. And that's obviously the biggest reason. But several times in there, he reiterates just how young they are and how talented the young players are. That's a top 10 recruiting class this year. And they have to play a lot of them. You know, their junior class, their senior class, they're not overflowing with draft talent this year. So they're really relying on some underclassmen, and they're going through some growing pains, and it's showing because they can put together really good games where they go out and beat TCU in Fort Worth on Friday night, and then they can go get swept at home to start Pac-12 play by Oregon State. Arizona State is not a team that gets swept. It's been like 20 years, I want to say, since this has happened. I think we still can feel pretty good about them putting it together. I don't know what putting it together will fully look like, but I do know that what they are this weekend, like, I feel confident in saying that's not what they truly are. I don't think their identity has been established yet, is I guess what I'm trying to say here.
Right, right. And certainly everything you're saying is fair, especially with the, you know, a young team like they are. And then you mentioned Arizona and how well they've been playing, and you know that series against Oregon State is going to be, you know, a really fun one. And you know, you look at what they did this weekend, you know, in their Pac-12 opener, taking 2 out of 3 from UCLA, just narrowly missing a sweep, losing 8-7. And you know, you just look at what they've done, it's been very impressive, from especially an offensive point of view. Just the new guys that have come in, and you know, we talk a lot about Nick Quintana and those kinds of guys, but then even the guys who have taken a step up from a year ago, Jared Oliva, JJ Matijevic, and then, you know, they've really done a great job, and you know, they did this all year last year of just, you know, piecing it together on the mound. And just finding the right guys. You know, JC Cloney is kind of the anchor there, you know, at the front of the rotation. And then, you know, they might mix and match a little bit here and there, but they find the right guys, and they find, you know, a way to get it done. And, you know, I think it's just been a, you know, pretty masterful coaching job by Jay Johnson so far in his 2 years there.
Well, you know, you don't really need to team me up to compliment Jay and his coaching. They've done really well this year. They had to integrate a lot of younger guys, a lot of JC guys, and so far it's working. You know, they're into the top 10 now. They have this huge series at Oregon State this weekend, and it'll be very interesting to see how they respond to that. Mm-hmm. You know, they've had some tough weekends already this year. They're number 3 in the RPI, in large part, A, they have a lot of wins, and B, because they've played a difficult schedule. But this will be their toughest road test of the season. It'll probably be that way all year. You know, Oregon State is going to be a lot of teams' toughest test of the year. And going to Corvo, especially in March like this, I mean, you never know what you're going to get. So it's going to be a tough series. It's going to be a tough environment to play in. You know, Oregon State is going to have a lot of fans there, I'm sure. And, you know, they're going to be ready to go. And Arizona is going to have to be ready to go and to match it themselves.
Right, right. And sticking on the West Coast, you know, I think you know, we need to talk a little bit about Cal State Fullerton and what they've done. I mean, they've been rolling. I mean, they beat Arizona in a midweek game this past weekend, 4-0, and then, you know, hosting a New Mexico team that came in, you know, pretty hot in its own right, you know, sweeping them this weekend. And, you know, really, it's just kind of been the, you know, traditional Cal State Fullerton team of just, you know, pitching and finding a way to scrap across runs and score just enough to win. I mean, obviously that's kind of, you know, the West Coast style in general, but certainly it's a formula that's worked for Cal State Fullerton in the past and has continued to work. And, you know, now you look at their upcoming schedule, it's going to be a difficult slate this week. They're playing at San Diego midweek, which San Diego is a team that's played very well this season. And then they're playing at Long Beach State to start Big West play. You know, a team
that is a non-conference series.
Yes.
Against their arch rival and Big West foe, but the first one, they play twice every year. Only one counts for the Big West.
Right.
This first one does not count. Fortunately for them, the one that counts is at Fullerton, because they're going to Long Beach, going to Blair. I mean, that that's never easy for them. And you know the Dirtbags are going to be ready for that one.
Yeah, certainly. So that's going to be fun to watch for sure. And you know, they continue to climb up our rankings. We have them at number five this week.
Yeah, I mean, we had them as a top 10 team coming into the year, and I think they've been exactly what we thought they were going to be, and they just keep winning. They're on a 7-game winning streak right now. They've won like 10 of 11, and most of those games have come against teams that made regionals last season. I mean, they're really going, and they got their pitching working, like you said. John Gavin was really good last night. He struck out 14 guys, career high. And obviously Connor Siebold's been really rolling. They've got some young guys going. They're a really talented team, and they're playing like it right now.
For sure. And then, you look at the rest of the top 10, Clemson and South Carolina both slide up. Clemson to number 6, South Carolina to number 7. The Gamecocks were the preseason number 5 team and slid down after struggling against Clemson and losing that series. But it seems like both of those South Carolina teams have really sort of hit their stride these last couple of weeks. I mean, Clemson, faced a very tough Virginia team, lost the opening game, and then rebounded to win the next 2 days. I mean, that's an impressive series win, and,
I was really impressed by that because I thought, after they lost on Friday night, Virginia's best pitcher is Adam Haseley this season, and he's going on Sunday. I figured, that Virginia might be able to go down there and win a series, but, give a lot of credit to Clemson for bouncing back the way they pitched the next 2 days, and the way they swung the bats, especially late in the series. Daniel Lynch was really good on Friday night for Virginia, but Clemson got their bats going and they got some strong pitching and they come out of there with pretty significant series win.
Right, and for Virginia, it's back to back series losses to start ACC play, but. I mean, they haven't had the easiest draw to start ACC play. Obviously, playing at North Carolina to start the conference slate and then going to Clemson after that, that's not an easy combination at all. They host Duke next weekend, their first home ACC series, which on paper, Duke is coming in 11-11. You would imagine Virginia should be able to handle the Blue Devils. And then after that, it goes back to being hard again, playing Louisville. Our number one team this week for the second straight week, and a team that just, as John alluded to earlier in this podcast, I mean, they just have the best player in the country in Brennan McKay. I mean, it's unbelievable what he's done so far this year. And I believe you tweeted he has as many intentional walks as he does walks as a pitcher.
Yes, he has been. This is my new favorite Brendan McKay stat. There are a lot of really good Brendan McKay stats. You can pick out any number of them, like how his batting average is higher than his ERA. Mm-hmm. But my favorite one, and this is potentially one of my favorite stats ever, is that he has been intentionally walked 6 times this year. He has walked 6 batters in 25 minutes on the mound.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable what he's doing. And obviously, he's central to what everything Louisville does. But Cade McClure was exceptional. Starts the game on Saturday against Boston College. Like I've mentioned all the time, they're hitting all enough down the lineup, pitching fast and deep. Again, the schedule has not been particularly onerous. It's going to get harder. This weekend, they go to North Carolina State. Next weekend, they go to Virginia. So we're going to really see more of what they're made of. But they are playing incredibly well right now, and they have the best player in the country, and keep playing like it.
Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I'm particularly interested in the Virginia series in a couple weekends. Those two teams matched up. Adam Haseley going against Brendan McKay, two two-way talents going at it, and two of the top two-way talents in the country. I mean, if Brendan McKay wasn't in the same league as Adam Haseley, we'd be talking about Adam Haseley as the top two-way guy in the ACC. So that's certainly going to be an exciting matchup. But looking at the rest of the top 25, in the back half, as John mentioned, we brought in Missouri, 19-1 this year. Haven't played a tough schedule to this point, but 19-1 is 19-1, and there's a lot to like with that club so far this year. And then you look at...
I also want to give Missouri credit for going on the road. Yes, they went on the road this weekend because the SEC made them. But, they have not, just sat at home. And part of that is maybe because they can't in Columbia, Missouri. But they went and they played in some tournaments. And, They've won games at home. They've won games on the road. They've won games big. They've won games close. Like, they're finding ways to win. It's more than just the record for Missouri. The record is loud, and the record is why they are where they are, but it's more than just the record with Missouri.
Right, right. And then behind them in the top 25, we have the Oklahoma State, Washington, Michigan, three teams that all moved up from where they were ranked a week ago, teams that all had, you know, great weekends. I look at Oklahoma State, I see them really, you know, they had their struggles early in the year, similar to last year. There was a lot of turnover on that roster, especially from an offensive point of view. But it seems as though, you know, they're finally starting to hit a little bit. You know, Garrett Binge had a really nice week for them, hitting four home runs. I mean, if you can get that guy going, he's always had, you know, the bat speed and some pop in his bat, but, you know, it seems like he's taken a little bit of a jump. And then you look at Washington, we wrote about it in our weekend preview, but, you know, a rematch with Utah, you know, the Pac-12 winners a season ago, and, you know, that the conference really came down to that final series between those two teams, and, you know, Washington sweeps Utah. I mean, they take it to them, and It's a big statement from Washington early in the year, and obviously to start Pac-12 play. You know, they've struggled to this point. They've had their ups and downs. You know, they were a team that we really liked coming into this year, and, you know, had kind of just, they haven't really found their way to this point. But, you know, to me, I mean, that was certainly a big statement for the Huskies.
Yeah, no doubt. And I don't think that's I don't know if they were thinking about revenge. That series probably doesn't give them full revenge anyway. You know, Utah still gets to keep the trophy from last year, but, you know, I imagine that felt pretty good to start the Pac-12 season that way, after the way it had ended a year ago in Salt Lake City.
Right, right. You know, and then dropping out this week, Coastal Carolina and Texas A&M. Coastal Carolina, you know, it's worth noting, obviously, as the defending national champions, you know, to this point, I mean, 12-9 in the year, lost 2 of 3 to Texas State this weekend. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of turnover with that group, especially from a position player standpoint. They were a very veteran team last year when they won the national championship. I mean, for you, do you see Coastal rebounding? Do you think they have the talent to put it together and get back into the top 25 at some point? I mean, certainly it was a team that we liked in the preseason, but there are some questions, you know, especially from, you know, a position player standpoint, who is going to step up and be the guy for them?
Right now, I think, I mean, you're right, there are questions there, but to me, the questions more are like in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. And those are questions the Coastal had themselves coming into the year. You know, that's why Andrew Beckwith started the year in the bullpen before they felt like they had to move him back to the rotation. They've got some issues to work through. You know, this is a team that often starts a little slow. They play a lot of games right out of the gate, and sometimes that is not the best thing for them, I feel like. In the long run, it definitely works out for them, but it means that, you know, they're having to throw a lot of pitchers that, you know, maybe they won't later in the season, and they find out a lot about the team. So there's a lot of benefits from it, but it doesn't help their record a lot. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if they're able to do that. It's going to be harder this year just because their conference is better now. This is their first ever Sun Belt series. It's just a better conference than the Big South was. But, you know, I do still believe in that team. You know, I think they'll get it together. I don't know if we'll see them in the rankings again anytime soon. You know, whether it comes this month, next month, the end of May, I don't know. If I was Coastal right now, I definitely would be worried about that anyway. They've just got to get where they feel comfortable with some guys there, both in the lineup and in the bullpen. And, you know, get ready for what will be a pretty tough conference play for them. The Sun Belt is no easy task. So, you know, this weekend they go back home and they got Arkansas State, and we'll see if they're able to get back with a series win there in Conway.
Right, right. Well, you know, that essentially rounds out our top 25. You know, Teddy, was there anything this weekend, you know, that we haven't touched on this podcast that really jumped out to you or stood out to you?
Shout out to Mike Appel at Central Connecticut State for throwing a no-hitter. Mm-hmm. The rash of no-hitters in college baseball continues this weekend. So he threw a no-hitter. There were a few, you know, guys that took one-hitters deep or nearly missed one-hitters. But he finished it off, so kudos to him up there at Central Connecticut State, and kudos to them for finding a way to play. The whole Northeast was obviously pretty weather impacted this weekend. So it was interesting to see how teams moved it around and stuff. But for the most part, they got a lot of games in, I feel like. So good job to all the coaches there and the administrations who were able to help make that stuff happen.
Right, certainly. Yeah, it has been kind of fun just to see how many no-hitters there have been so far this year. It does seem like, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it does seem like it might be a few more than you might see to this point in the year. But
I mean, it's 6 already. That feels like a lot.
It feels like a lot. I'd be curious to see historically where that ranks, with other seasons at this point in the season, certainly, and, over the course of the entire season. But Teddy, I mean, I know you have to drive back from your excursion to Auburn, catching the Florida Auburn series. So we'll let you get back on the road. We appreciate you joining us from the phone. Make sure you follow Teddy Cahill at Ted Cahill on Twitter. We thank John for joining us for a little bit today, at least a little bit more than he was with us last week. That was a 2 to 3 minute deal last week. This week, at least, he got to throw in some takes and some thoughts on some Greek players and WBC and all of the above. And I've been Mike Lanana. You can follow me on Twitter at @mlanana. This has been another college baseball podcast brought to you by Louisville Slugger Power Numbers. Stay tuned for our coverage this week. Keep going on baseballamerica.com. Follow us on Twitter, and we'll talk with you guys soon.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.